Let's talk about the case of Martina Arganovska. It's a case that I think serves as a bit of a microcosm of what's wrong and what's broken about not just the British legal system, but I would argue the broader British culture as it pertains to self-defense. Stay with me. See, she was 18 years old in 2019, so she was barely a woman. She'd begun dating a man. She had known him only a few days. And she'd gone out for a night with this guy and with other friends as well. He, at the end of the night, offered to give her a ride home. And then instead of giving her the ride home, which she accepted, he drove in the other direction, intoxicated, and then he brought the car to a stop and he began sexually assaulting her. At this point, she pulled out a knife that she carried for self-defense and stabbed him once in the chest. He died from that wound. She subsequently, you know, handed herself in to police. She was charged for this attack and she was sentenced to 17 years in prison. Bear in mind, the fact that he was actively sexually assaulting her at the time of the attack is not in question. There is no dispute there. Everyone agrees he was violent and he was engaged in an active sexual assault when she stabbed him. And yet, she was sentenced to 17 years in prison, which she is still serving. She was appealing that verdict, and the appeal just got ignored because it was argued that it was actually just. I mean, I don't like to use that word because I don't think it's true, but that is the argument that the British legal system is making. But just to go back just a little bit, back in 2019, again, first trial, right? You got Judge Farrell there who said, and I quote, that Philip had undoubtedly touched you sexually and was violent to you shortly before he was killed, end quote. I just want to kind of, you know, get that to reach everyone, that part is not in dispute, you know, because like in American cases, I think that's where the focus would be. Well, was he really assaulting you or did he run away or was he asleep and then you attacked him later? Those are all, you know, those are not self-defense cases. But this was a self-defense case, and yet they argued that it wasn't self-defense. Why? Because she had brought a knife to the scene. No, really. The fact that she had brought a knife, which it was later proven that she did in fact need to defend herself, is indicative that she didn't defend herself, or at least that she didn't have the right to defend herself with that weapon. No, it really is that egregious. You can look this case up. It's horrendous. They said that her case didn't qualify as self-defense because she had brought a knife to the scene. Now, because the legal system over there is so broken, her lawyers instead decided that they would focus on other things. The fact that Martina already had post-traumatic stress disorder from a previous sexual assault, which led to a convoluted argument as to whether or not she consented to to that rape back when she was 14 years old, because if she did, and somehow that affects whether or not she does in fact have post-traumatic stress disorder. But all of this is just garbage, right? Because you have the right to self-defense regardless of whether or not you've been attacked before. It is not the case that you have to first endure an attack and then have a subsequent mental disability in order for you to gain the right to defend yourself and to have the means to do so. But that is what the British legal system, actually on both sides, defense and prosecution, were implicitly arguing, more explicitly, obviously, on the prosecuting side. Because again, she was being made into the victim by the legal system because the attacker was dead. But I think it's, if you look at sentencing cases, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that he would probably have gotten a much lesser sentence than she received had he survived the attack. But so there's this huge focus on the fact that she brought a knife, which is interesting because if you compare it to another act, another massive injustice in the British legal system. If you compare it to the Muslim child rape gangs, okay, well, a lot of those people are free now, and they got much less sentences than she did for effectively bringing a knife to the scene, right? So if you look at Quarry Abdul Rauf, who was one of the more, I guess, famous attackers, he ran one of these child rape gangs. He was sent to prison for 6 years. He served 2.5 years, and then he was back out on the streets. And he wasn't deported to Pakistan, despite being an immigrant. Do you want to know why? Because if he was deported to Pakistan, that would deprive the man of the right to family life, since he has a wife and kids in the UK. So that man, Quarry, continues to live in the same city in which he terrorized young girls and raped them and even sold them to other men so that they could in turn rape them. He continues to live in the town where he committed barbarism, right? But, you know, he didn't use a knife. And apparently, in the British legal system, there seems to be nothing really quite that you can do that's worse than using a weapon, which is really, it's really rather odd. But when you really break it down, anti-weapon mantras, they prevent equalizers. They leave the weak at the mercy of the strong or the more capable or the more numerous. So under the auspices of morality, you leave the weakest people unable to defend themselves against those who are stronger. And as you can see, disarmament isn't moral. It's become something of a false morality that I think has gone from the legal system in England and has sort of spewed out into some of the culture as well. But it's not moral. In order to, I mean, I think you've seen this sort of cultural change over time where you had, well, guns are bad because, you know, reasons essentially. And then, well, people, though, they still need to defend themselves. And so then they went to carrying knives. But then other people, bad people, did things with knives that they shouldn't have done. And therefore, nobody can have a knife. And so you end up trying to seek out the safety of maybe a prison. But none of that is moral. You, morally speaking, you have a right to life because life was given to you. It is a gift from God. And thus you have a right to the means to defend your life. But disarmament reduces your right to life below the desires of your attacker. That's what it does. And that's what is happening in this case. So you've got Martina, remember, she's an 18-year-old girl who is being attacked by a man. Pretty much any man is going to be stronger than she is. And so according to the so-called morality of the British legal system, she was required to endure the attack and then just, you know, perhaps have her attacker serve a couple of years like the Muslim child rapist did. That's not morality. It's heinous and it's evil. And I think that you have this false understanding of what a right is that's kind of fundamentally twisted inside of that system. But what it actually does is it takes victims and it further victimizes them, and it takes their perpetrators and repaints them as victims. And if you don't have this right to defend yourself, that also has other effects on the larger culture, as people aren't willing to say things that are offensive, for example, because if I was to do what I did and then did it over in England, well, then what am I going to do if there's somebody who's so upset and irate and crazy that I need to defend myself from him? There's no response. And so because of that, it creates a culture of silence, especially like if you're in England and you're criticizing Islam. Would you expect no physical repercussions? It doesn't sound wise. And so again, it creates this culture of silence. So as you lose your right to defend yourself, you also eventually lose your right to speak freely too, because that's the because this is one right that that protects your other rights, for example. And so these are the things that are just so inherently broken. And I draw attention to it because this is a country that we traditionally think of as being civilized, you know, as being part of the first world. But this isn't a first world decision. It's a barbarous one. And it's one that we ought to be sort of paying attention to as we look in other Western countries that want to follow this sort of disarmament path and pretend like that's morality when it's so obviously not.